Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, QT and Sign Guy with you once again here on a Friday. Real quick before we jump in with our guest today, if you're looking for wrestling, tonight you have WCWO in Indianapolis like usual, XCW in Jeffersonville, Indiana at the arena, SCW in Iowa City, Iowa, 3XW in Des Moines, Iowa, PWE in Philadelphia, PA, AAW in Austin, Texas, and PAPW happening in East Haven, Connecticut. Tomorrow night, Northwest Pro Wrestling in Vaughan, Washington, ICW in Indianapolis, Indiana, featuring our own local talent, Bad Blood, OTTW in Gadsden, Alabama, PPWC in Abbotsford, BC, FTPW in Coral Springs, Florida, IWA in Fairfield, Illinois, WWA tomorrow night in Central City, Kentucky, and make sure if you're headed out for some wrestling in our neck of the woods, you make sure that it's still happening. There's a blizzard out there. A few shows have been canceled, including WCWC in Oregon, as well as the Woo America show in Bremerton, Washington. They have canceled those due to the weather, so make sure you verify the show is still happening before you head to it. Without further ado, I want to welcome our guest today. Very excited to have on with us, Tyra Arusame. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me, yes.
Well, since today's your first time on our show, we're going to start you off with the first-timer's question today. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
I would dare say it was because of boredom. I remember back when I was in Singapore, this was around 2015. I was stationed in Singapore, and at the time I had a full-time job for the education industry, and at the same time I have moments where, like, I got bored after work. So what I tend to do is look for extracurricular activities such as Zumba, kickboxing, Zumba already, rock climbing, cooking, and then I found out about independent wrestling around 2013-2014. I offered to be the usher and tickets girl at their shows back in Singapore until I think around 2015 there was a opening for females to try out, and ever since then I never looked back. So that'll be my answer.
Getting into professional wrestling, were you a fan of pro wrestling before you started up, or was this a completely new experience that you weren't really familiar with going into it?
I was a fan, like, back in the late 90s to early 2000s, back in the Attitude era, and at the time I was fascinated with the WWF and basically how, you know, larger than life it was back then. And, I never thought that it would be possible to have independent scene at all at the time. I thought it was just something that you get accepted into, say, WWF company, they train you and you're a star. So that's how I looked at that time. And it was a fun bonding time for me because I have male cousins that are roughly my age or older, and we tend to roughhouse in the living room, so all our moms would, like, regret letting us watch wrestling. But I had fond memories back then. And, yeah, I grew out of it. I think, you know, once you finish high school and then you finish your college or university, you know, you don't really have time for, you know, your favorite hobbies from back then as you would enjoy as a child. So when I guess it was something that's like a rekindled passion that came back to me when I found out about the independent scene while working in Singapore. So it's more like, yeah, like return to your, you know, first love back then, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that I always notice in professional wrestling is that whenever you travel different places like you do, and you travel internationally, so this really applies to you, crowds tend to react to things differently as far as what they like, what they don't like, how vocal they can get, things of that nature. Have you found yourself noticing that?
Of course, definitely. Not every crowd is the same. It kind of goes to whether you are familiar with their culture, with their manners, with the manners would be the right word. So, for example, in my experience, when I did shows in Southeast Asia, such as Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, I haven't worked in Philippines, but that's an example. Southeast Asia, and China, a lot of times they are not, they prefer, I mean, I guess there's a distance. So, like, wrestlers don't have to get at the audience face, like some of the ones in the Western country, like in Australia, America, where they don't mind having the wrestlers get at the audience's face at the audience. So I noticed that. Also, the Westerners are more vocal, so they get invested into the match. They do the name calling or they do the cheers. Southeast Asia, it happens sometimes, but if you compare it to Japan, that's another different world altogether. The crowd doesn't say anything. They are very quiet. So as a performer, you catch yourself like, shit, am I doing this right? Is anyone watching? But actually, no, in Japan, they're actually observing you and they're invested in the match, but they don't have to react. So essentially, as an international wrestler, I have to adapt. So when I'm out here in America or Australia, I'm able to, you know, get at their face or talk back at the crowd. It's fine. But in Singapore and Southeast Asia and China and Japan, it's not necessary to get at their face, yeah, when you're talking or getting at them and so forth. So it really depends on every country, every time you enter. Some people are comfortable with personal space and some people aren't.
One of the things I've noticed from you watching you wrestle on a video and also seeing you live, you do sort of an elaborate ritual with your tape when you're making your way to the ring. You're adjusting the tape usually on the way to the ring to wrestle. I know a lot of wrestlers have very strict and very peculiar tape rituals that they do. Some people have to apply it a certain way every time. Some people write certain things on their tape every time. Some people are to the point where they won't get into the ring unless their tape ritual is met. Can you tell us about what it is with the tape in your specific situation?
In my position, I'm definitely the type that does not like to, like, enter the ring if my tape is not set right. Although it may cause a bit of an inconvenience at times, but I like to look at it as two ways. One, it enables me to, I guess, zone into my character when I'm, you know, into my persona before I enter the ring. And the other half is like building up anticipation, what's going to happen next, because it's going to be, not just, you know, fancy moves and all. Definitely going to be a lot of, you know, strikes, a lot of nothing's going to be held back. So that's how I look at it both ways for myself. Yeah.
In the same vein, a lot of people are very particular with their wrestling gear. A lot of people put a lot of pride and a lot of work into their gear. Where do you go for your wrestling gear, and do you have any type of ritual as far as putting the gear on or how you present the gear, that type of thing, when you go out to wrestle?
Depends on the persona. So if I am doing a, I try not to overwhelm with the like dark colors and so forth. I try to play around with colors. Definitely the red lipstick makes a difference. So I try to make sure my lipstick is not smeared at my two front teeth. Hair, yeah, I don't tend to, I let my hair be natural, so it's straight. However, when I'm doing the heel, the other persona, I let my hair go wild. So, you know, I make the time with my hair. So I do a ritual like maybe 3 days before the show. I, you know, hair mask it, make it look full. And then maybe the night before, I will, you know, do the necessary to make it look full, as in like tie it up into a mini bun, like many, many, mini buns. And on the show day itself, I won't let it go until on the show day itself and the hair is all wild. Because I understand everyone invests on, like, weaves and hair extensions. I'm trying to make it look as natural as possible. So that's what I tend to do. So one of them is definitely my hair. I take pride in it. Second one would definitely be my makeup. So if I'm doing my baby face, it's a lipstick, that's for sure. And the eye makeup, which is, like, not so messy and not so wild. And I'll smile more, of course. But if I'm doing the bad guy or the heel, I make the makeup as outrageous as possible. Yeah, so that's the two things I would emphasize on my hair and my makeup. Mannerism in the ring, it comes natural, you know, depending on the storyline and depending on the opponent. But to answer your question, I take pride in both my makeup and my hair.
I don't blame you. I know a lot of people absolutely take pride in those things, as they should.
Yeah.
You mentioned striking earlier, and I know that you're a pretty noted striker, as well as a lot of other styles of professional wrestling goes. Striking style can, of course, lead to some injuries in matches. I know you've been around for a while now. You've probably seen and had a few injuries over the course of your career to this point. What would you say are some of the bigger injuries you've either witnessed or had from wrestling?
Striking, I would say everyone has a style. So if it would help if the person or the wrestler have a martial arts background so that they know how to do a proper strike. And so when they, you know, practice it into strong style, you know, this way it makes it look very devastating and very, as quote unquote, real as possible. That's part of our job. However, you know, there are some that don't know what they're doing and they end up sucker punching someone in the face because they're too excited or they just can't control themselves. I believe would be the worst because some people don't know, don't realize it or are not fast enough to catch it. The worst I've seen is, I guess, two male wrestlers and one of them did like a super kick, but the other one didn't react fast enough and he just took it right in the face. And unfortunately for him, even though he braced a little, he braced himself, like, grit his teeth and took it. He had, like, a hairline fracture on his jaw, and he had a concussion for, like, a week. So, you know, it is part of the, and, you know, this is part of the territory, and it does happen every now and then. And, you know, things happen. So it's just a matter of being confident learning to not just strike and kick right, but at the same time, people need to learn how to protect themselves as well. So react accordingly or brace themselves fast enough that, or quick enough that they, you know, the impact wasn't so painful. That's how something I've learned in terms of striking. Yeah, that's the best I could say for now.
Now, for someone like yourself, you're not necessarily the biggest competitor on any roster for sure, but you're in very good shape. Do you have a particular diet that you adhere to as far as maintaining ring shape, or is it something that you don't necessarily have to be very strict with at this point?
To be frank, I'm a very horrible when it comes to food, because I love food. I'm a definite foodie. So every time I travel, I have to try their local foods, and usually they're the best food. So diet-wise, when I travel, I definitely would try their, like, their local foods for sure. Because, I mean, you're not going to be able to try that, you know, good local foods back in your home country, right? So, for example, Japan, definitely go for the udon, go for the ramen, go for the sushi. Yeah, definitely. Don't go for fast food. Like, what the hell? Unless, like, it's past midnight, then okay. If you're really hungry, then you can binge a little. So I would say I try and moderate. Like, now that I've moved to America and this is going to be, you know, my residence in Denver, I do miss a lot of food back home in Thailand. So we're famous for, like, spicy, savory, and sweet, but, you know, that's not something I can have out here, so I have to adapt. So when I adapt, I have to moderate on my, let's say, rice, pasta, and potato, for example, and try and adapt. So say you have this, rotisserie chicken that you get from, like, Whole Foods or, like, you know, groceries. It's a whole chicken, so I'm not going to be discriminant and say, oh, I'm only going to eat white meat. I will eat the meat, but I'm definitely not going to eat the skin or fat, and try and get creative with the chicken so I can have it with, like, as a broth with vermicelli noodles, which is like a transparent noodle made from beans. So, I mean, there's many ways you can substitute and try and adapt. But I never limit myself to be just only chicken breast only, because to be fair, it's not cheap to eat healthy. So it's just a matter of, like, trying to adapt and, like, substitute. That's what I would say. And definitely controlling carb and sweets. That's for sure. Because out here, I mean, America, everyone here, the portions are huge. So portion is another factor. I try to, like, say I'm eating a potato, the quantity, I'll try and make a fist. I'm trying to eat about the quantity of my fist. Whereas protein and all, I'll eat as much as I can. But for the most part, my stomach's pretty small. So adapting out here, it was okay so far. So all I can say is moderation, because every now and then I'll have a sweet or two, or a muffin or two, or a cookie or two. But it doesn't mean I have to be, you know, strictly no, 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 no. So once in a while, yeah. That's all I can say. Moderation, portion, and control. That's all. So not really a strict diet per se, but something like that in general. That's what I practice anyway.
Moderation is usually a pretty good guide. Now, you've been in the ring in a lot of different places because you travel quite a bit. That means you've been in there with a large number of different referees, and referees are possibly underrated as far as importance from not only people watching the matches, but people on the other side of the curtain as well. Not a lot of promotions put a lot of effort in getting quality referees. Some places really do. I know you've probably been in the ring with both spectrums of that. Who would you say are some of the better referees out there that people may not appreciate fully, but really should appreciate the work they do?
Oh, wow, that's a hard – that's really hard because I don't want to play favorites. I do remember – well, not by name in Australia. Oh, no, I remember him now. Connor, yes. He may be one of the younger referees, but I love the fact that he can adapt. He could read the crowd and read us and then know when is the time to intervene and when not to intervene or when to tell us, hey, it's a 10-minute limit, you know, bring it home. So Connor is one of them back in Australia. Andrew is another one in Australia. He may not like look like a wrestler, but he would demand that I'm in control of the match. Okay, don't talk back at me. So I like the fact that some referees they know their worth and they know where to stand. However, I do have some scenarios like in Singapore and Malaysia. Singapore referee. Sodic, his name is Sodic. Lovely guy, fun. And poor guy would sit through the entire like 10 matches of that night, but he would still keep smiling and he would still, remember accordingly how to act and how to address the crowd. And even the crowd would talk back at him and say like, no, that's a two, no, that's a three. So, I do see a lot of wonderful, talented referees that do get noticed and do not get noticed. I'm not going to name the one in Malaysia, but, you know, he does a wonderful job. However, you know, sometimes in the locker room I do see occasions where, you know, there's a sense of bullying from the actual roster. And I've seen it happen in America sometimes, too, with some of the companies I've worked with. So, essentially, my word with referees when I do talk with them in the locker room is that know that you are the one calling the match. You are the one counting. You are the one to, you know, give us the direction. Yeah, granted, us wrestlers are there to do our stuff, but essentially you're the one who makes the call to who wins and who doesn't win, right? So it's just a matter of perspective. The same with valets, the same with managers. People forget that valet and manager, they also play a role. And if you're a trainee and you're just going to start off as a manager and valet, it's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having those roles because essentially the importance is that you have the feel of what it's like to be in the crowd or being in part of a show. A lot of times people forget it's not always the wrestlers that are having to shoulder the show. It's everyone else. And if everyone does their role correctly or know what they're doing, it just makes the show way better. That's how I look at it. And I've seen it myself where it does happen. And, you know, the magic's right there. The crowd gets super invested that, you know, you tell yourself this is what it's all about. You know, it's about the fans enjoying the show. And some people forget it too. They think about themselves like, oh, I want to stand out. Oh, I want to be over. Oh, I want to be the memorable one. Chances are fans might not even bother remembering you. It's just a matter of perspective. That's how I look at it anyway.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is with us, and I'm sure that he has questions, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a bit.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Tyra.
Hi.
Tyra, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners if you recently had a match in Bremerton, Washington?
Yes, I did. I worked with, I guess you all call it WU, World Underground Wrestling America. I worked with them last month, around January. And the venue was quite small, and it was very different because the locker room was very cramped, and us females and males had to be together, so that was quite awkward. However, I love the energy of the crowd. They've never met me, but it was my debut, and I made a good impression, and I made a few fans myself on that night. It was really cold that day, too, like mostly raining. I remember that.
Yes, well, we're in the middle of a snowstorm up here. You managed to avoid that. Yes.
Yeah, I was there last month, yeah. It was raining most of the time. But the locker room, everyone was very friendly, very cordial, almost like a family. And, yeah, and the crowd, you know, old, young, all nationalities, you know, everyone, you know, was there to be entertained. And they were happy at the end of the show. Everyone was happy.
How did you feel about the closeness of one of the walls that was only about 2 feet from the ring apron and had a sombrero on it?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I felt a little awkward because I'm nervous. Like, well, definitely I'm not going to do a dive. Definitely. However, the ceiling was not as high. I remembered that. So when I think one spot when we're supposed to do the tornado DDT, I just did a little jump, like a hop. I didn't really do a big jump because the ceiling was kind of low. And prior to my match, I remember the ring, the second rope snapped because of the previous match before with these two big guys. So I was also worried about the second rope might snap during our match too. So overall, it was like scenarios whereby we don't even have a ring, but it was shoot wrestling, and we have nothing but concrete, and we still have to do a show at the underground scene. So the ceiling is not really a big deal, or a broken rope is not a big deal. The most important is that, you know, as long as you put on a good show, the fans will, you know, that's important, regardless of how it turns out. So we did the best we could, given any situation we had to anyway, and I had to as well. As I said earlier, underground wrestling, when I've met, I think 2 years ago, with one of the bookers, Ron Von Hess, we met each other in Japan, and it was the World Underground Wrestling, the actual one in Tokyo. They have like a small ring, and there was no ropes, but there was chains.
Chains? Wow.
Yes, like actual chains, like, you know, the stuff you pull heavy duty stuff with trucks or whatever, hardware. Yeah, the rope is chained. So although we're not allowed to run the ropes or climb on the chain, but if you're getting choked on the chain, it kind of pinches your neck or it pinches your face. So, it's still entertaining. It's still wrestling. They can that as backyard wrestling. I've had a huge debate over it when people saw my match. I shared a video of it too from the Japan Underground Wrestling. World Underground Wrestling Tokyo. Sorry, and I shared a few clips on my Instagram. If you look it up later, I had many people, you know, comment or DM saying that, oh, that's not wrestling. That's backyard. And I had to put my foot down and tell people, especially marks and so-called intellectuals or whatever. I told them, look, a wrist lock is a wrist lock. And this underground, the reason why it's so likable or appealing is the fact, firstly, to win a match in the underground scene, normally you either knock them out, KO, or second, you win by submission by making them, you know, tap out, which is basically the same foundation as, you know, MMA, UFC, how they were back then. So underground has been around way before UFC and MMA, became formal as they are now. So way before that, underground was there for, like, I think 30 or 40 years. So back to my point, when I have people telling me, no, what you're doing in the underground scene is backyard wrestling, I correct them and I tell them, backyard wrestling is only for people who look at a match and try and do it at their bed or, you know, side and say, oh, I can do this. I saw this on TV. That is a backyard wrestler. They don't have the foundation. They don't know how to do a bump. They don't know how to do strikes or break their fall or protect themselves. That is backyard wrestling. Underground, on the other hand, the scene itself is very much like how you would at a fight club. Very much so. Only difference is that it depends on which company you work with. Some of them would actually not have a ring. Some of them would have, you know, broken glass on the freaking concrete floor. So if you fall down and cut yourself, it's on you. So all I'm saying is that Underground wrestling, it, on its own right, it is one of the, like a Fight Club kind of culture. So you don't have to, you know, how you say, you don't have to talk a good game to get in. You have to prove yourself to be part of this roster. And that was something that, you know, we all did when we were in Japan. If you can take a headbutt and you're bleeding on your forehead, crying and crying about it, nope, you earn respect already. You see, that's the culture.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, that's the culture for underground, and that's something I've been trying to educate people. And it's also shoot, so it's more believable as opposed to what you see in wrestling in a proper ring. You have the pinfall and you go 1, 2, 3. If you put that scenario with the underground scene, everyone, you know, the fighters will go, why the hell do I have to pin you down for 5 seconds? I just pound you and knock you out. I win. Done. So the logic is very different for both worlds. And I was very fortunate to be accustomed to both or get used to both. But, yeah, it's either you make it or break it kind of mentality. Definitely, yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, Tyra, we have quite a few new listeners tuning in every week due to the popularity of our show. Some people recommend it, and so out of curiosity, they will tune in, and some of them, our new listeners, are not wrestling fans. Can you give a description to these fans that might be just getting into wrestling on our show, what shoot wrestling is? Can you give a good definition?
Oh, right. Apologies. Shoot wrestling, say, is when you do a lot of grappling and a lot of submission. Yeah, shoot wrestling will be both. So in other countries, we call it catch wrestling, like how they do in UK and Europe. But it doesn't do, like for example, if you're going to strike, you're actually closer range as opposed to pro wrestling. You know, you make the movement really, really big and it looks really good. Like, so wrestling makes it like have the theatrics of it, like make it look good. Whereas shoot wrestling is like, you know, be quick, submit, strike, you know, quick, like an actual brawl kind of thing. It's hard to describe unless you're actually doing it. But for the most part, I would say grappling and submission. That's the trait of a shoot wrestling. So an example would be Ronda Rousey when she did the arm bar. That's definitely shoot. Right. But if you compare her arm bar with, like, say, Alberto Del Rio when he does the arm bar, it's a little different.
Wow. Okay. Very good description. Okay. All right.
That's the best I can give an example. I'm so sorry. I'm not really good at this explaining part. But if you compare these two, you can tell the difference. Like, and there's nothing wrong with both worlds. Pro wrestling itself, like, although it looks theatrical and big move and dynamic, you know, there are a lot of risks and there are some accidents that do happen. And shoot wrestling, the idea of shoot wrestling is to really take them down and, like, you know, break their arm or, yeah, as a core. But, yeah, that's the only difference with both worlds.
Wow. Well, you did mention the term Fight Club. Were you yourself a big fan of the movie Fight Club?
Yeah. I mean, the concept of it, yes. You know, no one talks about it if you're in it. But the concept of, like, you know, you earn your spot, you prove yourself, enough lip service kind of thing. That concept, I wholeheartedly believe in it. And thankfully, I've proven myself when I was in Japan in the underground scene as one of the rare females that would take on male. It didn't matter if my opponent is my height, like 5 foot-ish, or 300 pounds and 6 foot 2, 6 foot 5, it doesn't matter. You see, that's the beauty of underground or Fight Club concept, is that it doesn't matter who's the opponent. You have to, you know, prove your worth and beat each other. It doesn't have to be like a brawl, like punch in the face kind of thing. It doesn't have to be. However, like, who's the one who can take the other one down by submission and win by you know, by submission or by knockout. I had a friend when he had his debut into the underground wrestling scene. The poor guy, he took a headbutt, like a hard headbutt, and he KO'd on his debut. You see, and he didn't get up and worry about it. You know, he took it and, like, bowed and said, like, you know, thank you for the opportunity. I know I lost. But, you know, the roster and the people within the community took him in and said, hey, you know, this guy took it like a champ. The rest of us were like, holy crap, you're not dead.
Wow. Well, now, Tyra, a seminal moment in women's wrestling came when Mildred Burke, a pioneering woman wrestler back in the late 40s, traveled to Japan and made an appearance in the ring. That was the first time that many females had ever seen a woman enter the ring, and they were astonished when Mildred Burke actually lifted off his feet a male competitor. In fact, this started the very beginnings of the women's movement in Japan, although it was very slow to gain momentum over the decades. So Mildred, did you hear about this pioneering moment in wrestling history when Mildred Burke entered the ring in Japan?
No, back then in the, I guess, 40s and 50s, if I remember correctly, Japan was, I think, after World War II, if I understand correctly. Am I right to say that? So
yes.
They were adapting to the, I mean, of course, America came over and changed a lot of their, I guess, structure, their
yes.
government structure, their social structure, and, you know, made a few, and the Japanese had to adapt. So I guess Mildred, being the one of the pioneers, you know, gave an example. Like, the thing about Japan is that anything that anyone else, in particular America, introduced, the Japanese, they will adapt, and they take pride in making it better. And they did make it better. That's something I will emphasize. When I was there in Japan, example food, for example, you know, and you see all the cakes and everything, you compare it to, like, say, French cuisine and American, like, you know, desserts. In Japan, they take it to a whole new level. They make it all colorful and look more 3D. So, back to wrestling. I'm not familiar with the 40s, but I remember female wrestlers during that era were, like, still taking like the training like they would do in the Olympics. So they are all, until now, they still do that same concept of, like, they must do, you know, long miles for the mornings at 7 a.m., 6 a.m. in the morning, like you would train when you're an athlete at the Olympics. So they work hard and, you know, perform hard as well. So that's something I would like to emphasize, that although Mildred came in and she set, like, an idea, she brought in the idea of female wrestlers, and the Japanese, they take it and make their own niche out of it. And right now you have, and I would hate to say it, I would say Japan, when it comes to female wrestling, they have big and have their respect within its culture. Whereas unfortunately in America, like, what, late 2000s, so say 2010, 2012-ish, female wrestling became more in the spotlight, if that makes sense. I don't know how else to describe it. But I was there in Japan. Women's wrestling has been around, although since the 40s, like you've mentioned from Mildred, but it hasn't changed since then. Like, they aim to get better and better and better, even now.
Wow,
so
very good answer.
It started out and then it died out. Oh, no, it started out and then went quiet, and then you got the bra and panty era, which I hate. And then only about 2012-ish until now-ish, women's wrestling in America became more meaningful. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, that does. Yes. Okay. Well, now, Tyra, did you meet Ron Von Hesse in Japan? Is that where you
yes,
were
I
introduced
did.
To Ron Von Hesse? Oh, okay.
Yes. I got invited for the World Underground Wrestling or Exit promotion in Tokyo around, what was it, 2017? Yeah, around 2017, November, with my friends from Austria, the Europeans. And they also have underground wrestling in Europe as well. And I also did a few matches there. So, yeah, I met Ron Von Hesse and a few other Americans at the show in Tokyo, yeah. It was very interesting because it was right under a restaurant. The locker room was right under a Japanese or Chinese restaurant. And, you know, you could see all the refrigerators and ingredients and then the changing room. So it was quite fun, I would say. It's a very small, like I said, it's a small ring with chains instead of ropes. And smelled a lot of cigarettes, so it was difficult for me to breathe. But, yeah, it's definitely underground, like a basement.
Have you had a chance to meet Northwest? Well, he's currently living in the Northwest. And he's close friends with Ron Von Hesse. Have you got to meet Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster?
I have not. The Ron Von Hesse has spoken about him. So I've met him, but I haven't met him, sadly.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I would love to meet him someday. Maybe next time I visit, Seattle, Washington, or Burlington. I hope I could someday. So we'll see.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Tyra, I saw two YouTube videos that you were wrestling in. One was with Malaysia Pro Wrestling, where you were wrestling Scarlett Lead, and the other was where you were in a match with Careless Whisper for Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
Oh, man. So which one do you want to know?
What I got from that is Careless Whisper and Scarlett Lead were two very different personalities. When I first saw Careless Whisper, as she made her way to the ring, I was reminded of 1990s Chicago Bowl forward Dennis Rodman. Are you familiar with Dennis Rodman?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I believe he married himself. Am I right to say that?
Yes. Wow. Well, and my first impression of Scarlett Lead was that she reminded me of Malaya Hosaka. Are you familiar with Malaya Hosaka?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's a very interesting reference, but okay, I'll give you that. I do miss Scarlett Lid. That was her. Our first match together in Malaysia, and it was my first overseas one, because at the time I was stationed in Singapore and I was representing Singapore when I fought her in Malaysia. Yeah, she was the top female in Malaysia, and she wanted to face someone who is, in this case, myself, and she liked how intense I am, and I liked how she is as well, quite intense, and she has a crowd behind her, so it adds to the intensity when we fought. Right now, after that match, she took a break and she's working as an air hostess right now, so I haven't seen her since then, but I would say it's one of my fun matches I've had in Malaysia with her. Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, I'd say, now, Careless Whisper had a dollar sign on the front of her uniform. Have you heard the rumor? Well, Careless Whisper had a dollar sign on the front of her uniform. Have you heard the rumor that she has been in close contact with the Million Dollar Man?
No. But to be fair, for that match, by right, that match I was supposed to have James Ellsworth to face me for that match with MKW China. However, at the last minute, like I think a couple of days before the show, James Ellsworth backed out because he signed on for Money in the Bank with WWE. And so, felt bad for MKW. They still had to continue with the show, so they brought in Careless Whisper. Careless Whisper was meant to be a personification or an imitation of Carmella, actually. But I love your Dennis Rodman reference, though. I would definitely make fun of him later. Careless Whisper. I'll bully him later. I'll be like, dude, you're like Dennis Rodman, minus the hair. He's going to kill me later. I love the guy. Don't get me wrong. I love him. He's a wonderful wrestler from UK. His other ring name is Voodoo, actually. But, yeah, so they had to pull, you know, make the show go. And he, you know, he took the big step and worked the match with me as a Carmella.
Wow, I this match certainly made an impression on you, yes. Wow.
Yeah, it was a fun match. Like, considering if you compare my size, when I was with Scarlett, I was probably my best physique. But when I did with Careless Whisper, I just recovered from a broken arm. So when I got the clearance, like, I broke my arm around December 2017. And I was out of action for 6 months. And then when MKW China, you know, gave me the opportunity to work with Ellsworth, that he bailed. And they still continue the match, and I get to work with Kellis Whisper, wonderful talent. I still wore my arm brace. It might not be obvious, but it's on my left arm. I still wore it, I think, a couple of days after I got the doctor's clearance. But I still wore my arm brace at the time, so I couldn't do very – it was very frustrating those 6 months of, like, cannot do much with a broken arm. and wow. I gained the weight. So the curves – I mean, the good news is that I got curvy, but the bad news is, like, I couldn't do as much as I wanted to at that time with my, you know, weak arm. But I'm glad you enjoyed that match. Thank you. I tried my best, nope. Even though my arm wasn't perfect. The match was, it was a fun match nonetheless.
Wow, fantastic. All right. Well, Tyra, after Careless Whisper had you down on the mat from a hair mare at the 5 minute and 13 second mark, he went around and stood in front of you at the 5:20 mark and had what I can only describe maybe or call a modified headbutt without her head.
Oh, you mean the butt? Like the butt or the booty bump or whatever? I think that move was from another wrestler by the name of Lana Austin. She also did something like that too. And I think Toni Storm did something like that as well, where they did like a butt, you know, like bend over and use their butt to like ram into your head. So yeah, Careless Whisper did something like that to me, but I got him back. Well, her back. I got him or her back when I gave my, I called it the booty call sequence, where I believe you see it like a few minutes, like a few seconds later when I gave him like, it looks like a lower rear view. I call that the booty call.
Wow, yes. That was at the 5 minute and 59 second mark, and you got a two-step approach to it, so you had some momentum.
But it was fun. Like, I had reaction. A few creepy male fans and a few workers that say that, oh, you sat on his face after you did that. Can you do that to me? I'll take that. I'll gladly take that. I was like, oh, boy.
Wow. Well, it reminded me of Rikishi Fatu and his stink face.
Well, the stink face, at least you had something to hold on and then rub it. I didn't really have anything to hold on to except just Ram.
Well, do you know if Careless Whisper is as good as of a dancer as Rikishi Fatu, especially when he danced with Scotty Too Hotty?
Oh man, I prefer Rikishi. Sorry, Careless Whisper. I prefer Rikishi. No, nothing personal. I definitely prefer Rikishi.
Well, Tyra, you helped Careless Whisper up from the mat after you pinned him and her after she missed you and instead punched Cam Ferguson. You even embraced and hugged. That showed good sportsmanship. Have you ever been on the end of bad sportsmanship after a win when a competitor refused to shake your hand?
Far no. I have not. That was the first time, actually, where I show the sportsmanship because, I mean, you know, come on, girl. I mean, that's the concept, isn't it? Like, girls, we can fight and all that, but at the end of the day, we still love each other, right? So that was the approach. Like, you're wonderful. Like, that's how I look at it as. You're like one of my wonderful matches, and I enjoyed myself. Thank you. That's how I look at it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Tyra, how did you get the nickname Exotic Panther?
Oh, Exotic Panther was given to me after the World Underground Wrestling Company in Tokyo, which was like November 2017. Around that time when I made my debut, they called me the Exotic Panther. I mean, translation-wise, that's what they said. And then I asked the promoter, Fugo-sensei, I asked Fugo, may I know what made you decide his name? And he said, well, you're kind of catty, as in, like, fierce. At the same time, you're very stealth, like, methodical, like how you would expect from a panther or from a huge feline before they kill you. They kind of slowly make their way before they make an attack.
Oh.
He also said strikes. He said he loved my strikes, which I'm like, oh, thank God. Because Fugo Sensei is really somebody like to be a force to be reckoned with. Ron Van Hess would also say the same. If you hear a feedback or a compliment, and you rarely get a compliment. And he said exotic because of how I'm dressed. He said, although you're not showing all your skin, it's very fitting, and you're curvy for an Asian. So instead of saying sexy, we could say exotic because you're not, like, you know, bearing too much skin. So I'm like, okay, I'll accept that. I can accept that. Thank you so much. And I took that name with pride. Sorry?
Oh, I said very nice. Okay.
Yeah, it was wonderful because I never had a nickname. I just go by my name. So when they gave me that nickname, I'm like, wow, really? And I thought about it. After I got the answer, I thought about it. It made a lot of sense, and it suits me. I like to think so anyway.
Wow, all right. Okay, well, Tyra, it's been great interviewing you. And say hi to Careless Whisper or Dennis Rodman for me. And I'm turning it back over to the sound guy.
Sure.
Thank you, QT. Well, Tyra, we have a few minutes left in the show today, and I want to give you ample time. So if there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you have, social media, the upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite jewelry store, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
Okay, well, I do have my merchandise, so I would, you know, do follow me on my Instagram and my Facebook. So you can type up my name. So it's Tyra, Tyra, surname Rusame, so Russame. And You can just follow me on both. I do have Twitter, but I'm not really on it as much, but you can type my name there as well. I do have an upcoming match coming Sunday with the Denver, Colorado, where I'm residing right now, and it will be with the company called Primo Pro Wrestling. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Yeah, follow me on social media and drop me messages. That's the best I can say. My word of advice is two things. One, love yourself, have fun, and finally, don't be afraid to be different, because you never know. You either you either be loved or you either be rejected, one of the two. But don't ever change. Just embrace being different. That's the best I can say for now. Yes.
Well, Tyra, I want to thank you very, very much for being our guest today. It was a pleasure to have you, and hopefully
Wonderful.
We will cross paths again very soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you for having me over. It's been a wonderful experience. I hope I'm not too boring. but, yes, I do hope we do cross paths eventually. Yes.
Well, you are definitely not boring, and thank you again. Fans, if you've not seen Tyra in the ring, rectify that. Check her out on the YouTube. Buy a ticket and go see her in person if you get the chance. She's fantastic at what she does. She's going to be doing some very big things in the near future, I'm very sure. So support her and what she's doing. We'll be back with you on Sunday afternoon. Sunday we have Amos Awakening out of the great state of Ohio with us. So make plans to be with us. Be safe out there if you're in our neck of the woods here in the Northwest. Lots of shows being postponed and canceled, so definitely check out if you're planning to head to a show that it's still happening. And we will be back with you Sunday.